from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Mina Kim. Well, there's really no way to sugarcoat it. California Republicans took a real shellacking in the November election, shut out yet again of all statewide races from governor on down. Their congressional delegation cut in half from 14 to 7 out of California's 53 congressional seats and reduced to virtual irrelevance in the state legislature. So what will it take to rebuild the GOP in California? Is it even salvageable, given its long slide downward? We'll get different points of view this hour, and we'll get started right after this news. Good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer in today for Mina Kim. Well, election night seemed like a pretty good outcome for Democrats in California, winning all statewide contests and picking up a couple House seats. But now that all the ballots are counted, or at least almost counted, pretty clear the election was a rout for Republicans in California. Their House delegation in the state cut in half from 14 to just 7 out of 53 congressional seats, and Democrats regaining more than just two-thirds majorities in the legislature, as many as 61 in the Assembly out of 80. So this hour we ask, is there a way back for Republicans in California? And if so, what would it look like? Joining us are Kristen Olson. She is a former Republican leader in the state Assembly, now a member of the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors, and also part of a group called New Way California. We'll talk to her about that and more. And Kristen Olson, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Scott.
Also with me here in the studio is Matt Shoup. He's a managing partner with Praetorian Public Relations, also chair of the Contra Costa County Republican Party, and worked on John Cox's Republican gubernatorial campaign as well. Matt, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
I want to begin by asking both of you, and Matt, you first, how would you describe the outcome of this election in California for Republicans?
Well, I mean, we got shellacked. This was obviously not the outcome that we wanted, but I also don't think it's as dire as some people paint it.
Why?
Because I think it's recoverable. I think that a lot of our losses were what I call technical and tactical. And a lot of these are things that we can adapt and learn to and improve upon. And, you know, you've seen this in cycle after cycle. One party doesn't perform probably the best way that they could, or use a lot of the new tactics and techniques, and they adapt and they overcome and they perform a lot better. You saw that between the Republican Party in 2012 and 2016, and now the Democrats between 2016 and 2018. As long as we learn from our mistakes and learn these new tactics and techniques, I think we can overcome our losses.
Although it's been 12 years since a Republican won a statewide race, so this isn't just a cyclical thing.
I think it is, but I think that our party has been slow to adopt some of these newer tactics, and I think that we have, you know, some messaging issues. And I think that, but the thing is, I still think those are overcomerable.
Overcomerable.
Yeah. It's early.
We have a new word. Kristen Olson, what would you add, or how do you disagree with that?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not as optimistic. I wish I was, and I would love to be proven wrong. But I think at this time, it is not salvageable. The fact is, under Brulte's leadership as chairman of the California Republican Party, we've done a lot to improve our tactics over the last several years. Now, could we do more to improve those further? Of course. There's a lot more we need to do. You know, the Democratic Party has gotten really good at ballot harvesting. We have not. So there's a lot of room to grow there. But that was not the primary problem this election night. It was a tsunami across California. And to just say, well, our tactics weren't good enough, I think is an insufficient explanation, because the fact is our tactics were better than they were 2 years ago, and they were better 2 years ago than they were 4 years ago. Tactics alone is not going to solve the dismal state that the California Republican Party is in.
And when you say, when you say it's not salvageable, what do you mean?
I really think we've seen a complete death of the party in our state when it comes to being able to provide a viable alternative to one-party rule. I just don't think one-party rule is healthy for any community, state, or nation. That's been proven true time and time again throughout history. It has a tendency to lead to abuses of power at worst, and at best, which is not good, it leads to, I think, insufficient policy outcomes to the problems facing our state.
So are you still a member of the Republican Party?
You know, I am right now. I will tell you, over the last couple of years, I've struggled with that on a weekly basis. I want to see our state thrive, and I think Californians are best served when people of differing ideologies have to come to the table together and shape public policy solutions, whether it's in housing, education, poverty, homelessness, transportation. It's best done when people have to work together. And we're at a place now where they don't have to work together because Republicans can't win tough seats. And this cycle, we saw we can't even win some of our safe seats.
And how much of what you've just described do you attribute to Donald Trump and his lack of popularity in California?
I think a fair amount, certainly not all of it. This has been, as Matt said, I do agree with Matt, that we've had struggles for many years now. This has been a slow decline. I think Trump's presidency expedited the final death. I think he is such a turnoff to the vast majority of Californians, and because most of the candidates would not separate themselves from him, it became very problematic. And what we noticed this year compared to 2 years ago, even those candidates, for example, Catherine Baker in the East Bay, who did separate herself, it wasn't enough to overcome the national Republican brand. That is hurting our ability to win elections. And so for candidates who were either endorsed by him or who embraced his approach, I think it was problematic for them.
Matt Shoup, your candidate, John Cox, sought out Donald Trump's endorsements. Was it helpful to him, or were the benefits just limited to the primary?
I think that it was a net positive. You know, and Chris and I are friends, and her and I actually agree on a lot of things. And one of the things that she did when she was Republican Assembly Leader, which I admired, was she really buffed up the communication staff of the Assembly Caucus, and I thought that was a good, smart direction to take it. But I think that it's not just techniques and tactics and whatnot. It's actually the message as well. And one of the things I think the Republicans should look at moving forward is how John Cox messaged. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine when I drive up here, and he said the Republican Party is known as the party for businesses and old white guys. And what John did is he really focused on people and people's problems and pocketbook issues and things that they could understand and touch on a day-to-day basis. We were talking about rent and gas prices and things like that, not, you know, these big issues like business regulations that Republicans are usually known for. And I think we talk about messaging. I think that changing the message to that is really important.
Well, and yeah, John Cox lost Orange County. He lost.
Barely.
Well, barely, but nonetheless, he lost. And Gavin Newsom, I think, got 62% of the vote. Mm-hmm. That's a big number.
Well, I mean, you know, as a political consultant, I know that at the end of the day, all that really matters is a win and a loss. And we lost. But if you look at, if you start to handicap it and look at it in a certain context, we actually did pretty well. If you compare us to Meg Whitman, who ran in 2010, the Republican voter registration was 31%, and you know she had $168 million. Our Republican registration now is at 24%. We had about $15, $16 million, and you know we got almost the same percentage as her. We actually got more raw votes in this midterm than Donald Trump did in the presidential election 2 years ago. And so our message obviously resonated. I think the fact that, you know, even though Republicans are 24% of the vote, for us to get 38-39% of the vote shows that there was turnover, that Democrats declined to states. We actually often outpolled Newsom with declined to states or no party preference in the state. And I think there was it resonated. Now, it wasn't enough. But I think that's to be dismissed.
Kristen?
Yeah, I think Cox was on to something when it comes to affordability. He really stayed pretty disciplined talking about the lack of affordability in California. And that is something that resonates with voters. However, you cannot escape the fact that in a percentage, he has the lowest vote percentage ever for a Republican gubernatorial candidate. So regardless of registration numbers, raw numbers, and all that, we can't escape that fact. And I do believe one of the major factors there was he did not separate himself from the Trump presidency. Now, you know, those are difficult decisions, certainly, but again, we cannot ignore the fact that it's our lowest percentage turnout for a Republican gubernatorial candidate in the history of California.
And Kristen Olson, one of
the... That's not positive.
Yeah, and of course, one of the issues of several facing the party, not just in California, but nationwide, is women. There was a huge gender gap. And, you know, how do you feel about, as a Republican woman, what the party has done wrong or what it needs to do to speak to, you know, voters like you?
I think we need need to do a better job at outreach. As Matt said, we've been working on improvements there for a number of years, and it's really difficult right now. You know, 2 years ago, I would have said, I think you and I even talked about it probably on the radio, Scott,
mm-hmm.
I would have said that if we continue to improve our message, if we do a better job of reaching out to non-traditional Republican voters, outside of the Republican Party, be it women, be it people down in deep parts of L.A., more Democratic stronghold areas, minorities, et cetera, if we improve our tactics, if we start to offer solutions, that we can get to a better place and overcome a national brand. You know, we can show that California Republicans are unique, we're thoughtful, we're solution-oriented, we're pragmatic. What we saw on this election night, though, is it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough to overcome an increasingly toxic national brand. And I think until the party acknowledges that, it's very hard to improve and become viable again if you refuse to acknowledge all of the different problems facing the party today. And you're right, the women vote is one of them.
Matt Shoup, among the issues that John Cox and others have made or tried to make an issue of, poverty in California, it's very high, income inequality, cost of housing. And, you know, the message of the Cox campaign and others was basically, look, the Democrats broke it. They own it because they run everything in California. Is that enough? You know, if you had had more resources and better tactics to get that message out, would that have been a plausible message for a party that isn't always identified with, say, helping low-income folks?
So I think that's 50% of the solution, as we identified a problem that wasn't being talked about often by the ruling party. What the other 50% was that we lacked was enough money to get out a positive message. Here are the solutions. You know, and one of the things that I've observed is when John made it into the general, you know, the caucuses didn't have, or the party didn't have, you know, legislative packages and solutions to address poverty, to address homelessness, to address affordability, to a lot of these things. I was actually thinking about this morning. I think under Kristen's time, you know, Vince Fong came up with a legislative package on how to deal with transportation.
Fong.
Yeah, Assemblyman Fong. You know, he came up with a package to handle the transportation issues that were going on. I think there needs to be a lot more of that. And I think that they need to be marketed in like in a roadshow fashion. A lot of the members of the caucus, they like to do puff pieces in their district to go, oh, I passed this bill, and they advertise it to their district, which makes sense. But they need to start being more aggressive and go into other districts and actually advertise and market these solutions. So I wish that, you know, it's great for us to identify these issues and tie the Democrats to it. But actually, we tied the political class to it. But I think that we needed to be able to offer solutions and get that message out. We had the solutions, but we didn't have the capability to get the message out.
We're talking about the future of the state's Republican Party with Kristen Olson, former Assembly Republican leader representing Stanislaus in San Joaquin County. She's now a member of the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors. Also, Matt Shoup, managing partner with Praetorian Public Relations, chair of the Contra Costa County Republican Party. And we'd love to hear from you. Are you a Republican, a disgruntled Republican, a former Republican, someone who has thoughts about the party, whether or not it speaks to you, or if you're a Democrat, do you see a benefit to there being a robust two-party system, or are you pretty happy with the way things are? Give us a call, 866-733-6786. Again, it's 866-733-6786. You can also email us. It's forum at kqed.org, or tweet us. We're at KQED Forum. Let me ask you a question, Matt, about one of the leaders in California for the party, Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader, currently majority leader in the House. His delegation was cut in half, and in part because of his rounding up of Republican votes in California for the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, which came back to bite some of these candidates. Has he earned, you know, sort of another round as leader of the party, or does there need to be sort of a reckoning with his leadership?
Well, I want to go back to the point I just made, though. So a lot of the congressional candidates throughout the country ran on repealing the Affordable Care Act, but they never had an alternative. I really wish that starting in 2010 that there would have been a Republican alternative to the healthcare problem, but that was never done. And it was never presented.
Do you think they just didn't think they needed one, or like why?
I don't know. I wasn't in those rooms, and I can't speak to that. And that it kind of goes into my point about, you know, Leader McCarthy, and that, you know, that's not my decision to make, and I'm not in the nuts and bolts of what's going on in D.C. And so, I mean, I think across the country, it seems like he's made a pretty good leader. I know that in our when he ran for speaker a year or two ago, I led an effort in the California Republicans to endorse him for that. And I'm always happy to see a Californian get leadership positions rather than someone else. So I would back him. But again, my role is California. So
yeah,
I don't like
that
to
is
go.
I think Matt's absolutely correct, though, about the importance of solutions. And I think it's best illustrated by healthcare. You know, you can't complain about the ACA for 7 years and then have no replacement plan. Right, when voters are going to go to the ballot box, they want to know what you stand for, not just what you're against. And so I think he's absolutely right that the California Republican Party and the people within it, the caucuses and the legislature, et cetera, can't just expose why Democratic supermajority rule is bad for Californians. They also have to offer comprehensive solutions on the various issues facing our state so that voters know what they stand for. And I think that that's been a struggle over and over and over again. Is there's a question in voters' minds today is, if I elect this Republican, what is he or she going to do for me at a statewide level?
What's an example?
That needs a lot of work.
Yeah, and what's an example, Kristen Olson, of a policy that, you know, perhaps the party should embrace or promote?
Well, I think poverty is a great one. We have to be able to cast a vision and then offer solutions in order to reach that vision. And as a vision, we want Californians in every region of our state to be able to thrive. The divide between some of our inland communities and more coastal communities is unacceptable. And so I think the vision is something that all Californians can grasp and believe in, but then we have to provide a roadmap on how we're going to get people there. When I was Assembly Republican leader and then the effort continued after I was gone, we put out 3 or 4 substantive, comprehensive policy platforms. We did one on education. We did one on transportation. We did one on technology and the new economy. And I think that effort needs to be revived if there's a hope that California voters are going to trust Republicans to lead again and provide more balance in the state.
All right, let's go to the phones. We have a lot of people that want to weigh in. Again, the number, if you want to join us, is 866-733-6786, and we'll begin in Santa Clara. Dan, you're first. Welcome.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a Democrat. As a Democrat, if you want to appeal to more people, Ms. Olson, you might want to refer to us as the Democratic Party and not the Democrat Party. That brings back all the nonsense rhetoric from days past. Look, nationally, we know what's going on. We have, quote-unquote, red states, blue states. It's not that. It's urban versus rural is the major divide. It's accentuated in California because of the concentration of wealth in the blue areas. This is the national scene that we have. We already have a pro-capitalist, socially liberal party. It's called the Democratic Party. What's going to happen is that the Republicans are going to be not me Republicans. You don't really have much. You've already been asked 3 or 4 times, what do you propose? And you give us rhetoric. You're hoping to hang around and then pick up the pieces if the economy stalls. Thank you.
All right. There's, I guess, a comment from Dan. It sounds like, Kristen Olson, you're saying that it isn't that the party has necessarily chosen the wrong issues, like there has been an effort to embrace poverty and income inequality, but that it hasn't quite developed and promoted the right message. Is that what you're saying?
I do. That is what I'm saying. But that alone, I don't think, is enough. But yes, I think that is a big part of it. And doing a better job reaching out to communities outside of our traditional strongholds, right? If we're just saying within our own communities, we're living within an echo chamber. We're not listening to people. We're not hearing what they really care about, and we're not building relationships or giving them a reason to trust us with solutions. So outreach is a big issue as well, and we have to acknowledge the national impact on the party's reputation here.
Matt?
I think Chris and I agree on a lot of things, but where we really disagree on is, you know, direction of the actual party. I don't think that the destruction of the party or the renaming of the party is necessary. You know, just because Pepsi doesn't have a majority share of the, you know, Coca-Cola, you know, business doesn't mean they're just going to blow up their brand and come up with a new one, or, you know, Adidas is going to stop being Adidas and come up with a new brand because they can't beat Nike. I think that, you know, just a year ago, you know, the Republican Party nationally had the presidency, we had the U.S. Senate, we had Congress, and I think this is premature at best, and I think it's just not going to happen. I don't think it needs to happen.
Do you think that it's the problem in California is unique to the rest of the country then? Because as you point out.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And I think the thing is, I think it can be solved and it should be solved. It just takes people to actually want to get in there and solve it.
But is there a way to solve it without sort of separating your image or even your name necessarily from the National Republican Party?
Well, absolutely. And to use like a military analogy, you know, the British Empire had a great storied history of military success, you know, and at some point they stopped lining up in straight rows and using muskets. They advanced in their, you know, tactics and technology and their procedures. And I think we just need to do the same thing. It's just you just have to evolve and advance over time, not change, you know, your entire branding, your name and everything about you.
All right, let's see. Yeah, Chris
Nielsen. Yeah. Hungry for something different. In the state legislature today, we have fewer Republicans serving now than we've had since the 1800s. The 1800s. I mean, that is a death. And the more I talk with people, there are millions and millions of disenfranchised voters, disenfranchised Republicans, disenfranchised Democrats, from the Democratic Party, NPP voters who left both parties for one reason or another, and they are hungry for something different. They're hungry for leaders who want to unify people, who want to help people who are struggling in the middle. And I don't think that that's something that can be offered by today's California Republican Party. It's not resonating, and it's time we do something different.
We're coming up on a break, but before we get there, I want to bring in one other voice. Doug Ossie is a former California congressman who served in the House from 1999 to 2005, was also a very big supporter of Donald Trump. Mr. Ossie, thanks for joining us.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you. So what are your thoughts? I know you probably joined this conversation in the middle, but one of the big sort of questions on the table is the influence of Donald Trump and how it affected the outcome of some of these congressional races in California and then down ballot as well. What are your thoughts? Was he a liability here in California?
Well, first of all, I want to say it's a privilege to be on here with Matt and Kristen. I don't usually get to run with that high a crowd, so it's nice to be here. I think there was a referendum on the president. In certain quarters, the Democrats did an excellent job in making their case, and the vote totals reflect that. I do think that Matt is correct in the sense that maybe we ought to talk about things that affect people's everyday lives instead of doing the same thing over and over and just trying to do it louder. So.
And how does that relate to the impact that President Trump had? And I'm going to ask you to be brief, and we'll bring you back in a second, but we have a break coming up in about 45 seconds.
Well, just because you're both Republicans doesn't mean you have to talk the same way.
Meaning?
It's that simple. I mean, you can talk about mental health in a way that reflects your district. You can talk about homelessness. You can talk about immigration in a way that reflects your district. And I think that's the key. I mean, you got to talk about stuff that affects everybody. People's everyday life.
All right. Doug Ossie, stick around if you would. We'll be talking with you and Kristen Olson as well as Matt Shoup. In the rest of the hour, we're talking about the future of the California Republican Party. You can join us by calling 866-733-6786 or email us. It's forum@kqed.org. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Mina Kim. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer here for Mina Kim, and we're talking this hour about the future of the California Republican Party in light of big losses for the party in the midterm elections. My guests are Doug Ossie, former California congressman who was very involved in the Trump campaign here in California, Kristen Olson, former member of the California Assembly, a Republican leader there, now a member of the Stanislaus County Board of Supes, and Matt Shoup, a managing partner with Praetorian Public Relations, chair of the Contra Costa County Republican Party. And you can join us at 866-733-6786. And let's go right to the phones, and we'll begin with Chris in Vallejo. Welcome.
Hi, I'm an independent voter, and I see the same issues going on with the California Republican Party as the National Democratic Party. They're both talking about tactics and messaging. Nobody's talking about governance, and nobody's doing governance. Politics has supplanted governance everywhere. It's about winning. It's not about doing what's right for the people. If you do what's right for your constituency, that's what wins. People. That's why the biggest party preference right now is no party preference, because nobody. More and more people are tired of the tribalism, are tired of people giving a pass to their own party when they do something wrong because it's their party, not because they're worried about what's right and wrong or what's best for the country. They're all worried about winning, and they're all worried about tactics. It's politics. What happened to governance?
Matt Shoup.
Well, I was thinking that's what I was actually just talking about, is that we need to address real problems that are affecting people. We need to come up with legislative packages that address those problems. That is governance. But at the same time, we have to be able to market it, get that message out, and turn out voters. You can't have a really good message and no tactics, and you can't have really good tactics and no message. You have to have both. And I think that our party in this state right now are lacking both. And I think that parties at time will lack one or the other, and sometimes both. But I think that both of those are solvable. And I think we're all talking about good governance.
Yeah, but Kristen Olson, it's hard to do any governance or be taken seriously in a place like Sacramento in the legislature when you have, you know, really not much relevance. I mean, they were talking about 60, 61 out of 80 members of the assembly being Democrats.
It is difficult, but you can't use that as an excuse not to earn yourself a seat at the table and offer solutions. I think Chris hit the nail on the head, and that's what so many people in our state and across the country are really fed up with. They feel like this is more about political gamesmanship on both sides than the fact that people matter, and we're in government to serve people. That has to become a focus again, where governing is more important than one-upsmanship. And I think we need to get back to, you know, a great illustration of why I'm suggesting that the party is not salvageable at this time in our state, that gives a really clear example of how Trump's presidency impacted our elections here in a negative way. As I mentioned, Catherine Baker before in the East Bay, you'll find no greater critic within our party of Donald Trump than Catherine Baker. People love her. She's still getting emails from both Republicans and Democrats saying, I love you. I appreciate how you served us in the legislature. I just couldn't vote for you this time because I can't vote for anything or anyone associated with the same party as Donald Trump. If we can't win a seat like that and win a re-election when we already have it, then we are never going to be able to grow in this state. That's a real challenge, and until we're ready to acknowledge that and separate ourselves from that, we're not going to thrive again as a party. We're going to continue to decline.
Chris, thanks.
And governing is at the center of the way forward.
Chris, thanks very much for the call. Let me ask you, you know, one of the things Catherine Baker did to separate herself from the party was, Matt, to support cap and trade, to support climate change kinds of policies. And there was, as you know, in Sacramento, Chad Mays, the assembly leader, did that, and he was deposed. I mean, is there room? Is there, you know, you have Republicans in Sacramento trying to do what, you know, Chris just described, the trying to govern, trying to be part of something bigger than just the party. And there doesn't seem to be room for that.
First, I actually want to address the caller. A point that he made is I want to make a point about the John Cox campaign is that, you know, our tour bus that we did twice, on the side of it, had help is on the way, and it showed nothing but pictures of people, you know, compared to Gavin's bus that was just, you know, Gavin Newsom on the side of it. And it
but
was
people
all
don't
Gavin.
Vote for buses.
No, I know, but I'm saying that, we made an effort to make a point to say that this campaign was about the people and helping people out in governance. To your point about, you know, cap and trade and everything and governing up there, I agree with a point that Krista made a second ago about just because you're a minority or a super minority doesn't mean you shouldn't, you know, try to earn your share at the table. I completely agree with that, regardless of how big our caucus is. As far as how to govern, you know, that the cap and trade situation was a really, I think, a tough one. And I think that should have been executed differently by the caucus. I think that there should have been more marketing and transparency and explanation done prior to the vote and in the time leading up to it. It seemed, and I actually worked in the building while this was going on, and I think that there was a lot of promise of transparency that wasn't delivered. And I think that was a problem with a lot of the base, was that they didn't see a lot of that. And I think that some people, because the caucus didn't market it and explain it, and the base kind of took hold of it and basically it was explained as more taxes, which it kind of was. And the whole situation just fermented, and it was a divisive point. But I think that there's a divide between the legislative leaders or the legislators and the base. And I think there needs to be more cohesion and understanding, and each entity working against themselves does not help any of us.
Doug Ossie, I know, as you know, one of the big problems facing the party is demographics. We certainly saw that in Orange County, where the Democrats picked up several congressional seats, and Latinos, Asian Americans, a very much a growing part of the electorate in California. And many would say that, the decline of the party could be traced back to Prop 187, the anti-immigrant ballot measure, which passed in California. It was a different era, but it was some 24 years ago. Do you feel that how big a problem do you think that is? How big a part of the problem is that for the party, this disfavor they find themselves in with immigrants and first generation Americans?
I think the American voter, whether they live in California, Northern California, Central California, Coastal California, Southern California, I think the American voter is looking for somebody who has a clear idea about where to go to solve problems. Let's go to, I want to touch on cap and trade just for a minute. You know, what, in terms of the policy itself, it's not a bad thing for us to reduce the amount of fuel we're using or the amount of carbon-based energy we're using. That's not a bad thing. The question is how to go about doing it in such a way that the cost of power doesn't become uncompetitive. That's where you got to quit. It's like you're fighting the wind in some of these positions we've taken. It's pointless. So figure out what the policy ought to be. The politics will follow, and so will the voters.
But just to press that a little bit, I mean, you know, cap and trade is something that I would venture to say most people don't understand, or if they've heard about it. But then you have the president this week saying he doesn't believe the climate change data, the scientific data. Doesn't that just sort of supersede anything that the party's going to do on an issue like cap and trade when you have the leader of the party saying he doesn't believe climate change is real?
So the climate change debate is about the cost of energy going forward. That's what it's about. There are people on one side who say, I don't care what the cost of energy is. There are people on the other side who are responsible for providing jobs and supporting families and communities who are concerned about what the cost of energy is.
Yeah. Mr. Ossie, we're going to let you go. Your cell connection's a little shaky, but we very much appreciate you joining us this morning. But let me pick up with that, Kristen Olson, this idea. I mean, you know, Doug Ossie was saying that, climate change and cap and trade are really about the cost of energy. But, you know, if you live in Paradise or if you live in Ventura or Thousand Oaks, it's really about how the climate is changing and how that affects your life, whether it's drought and you're a grower in the Central Valley. I mean, isn't that really the way to talk about that issue?
Yes, and I think we need to talk about it too by, working toward cleaner air, cleaner water. Wildfires have been devastating, as we've seen, just tragic. I was up in Don Pedro area a few weeks ago, and when I was a child, this one area of the lake there, of the reservoir there, you could have boats in. Now it was dry land, literally dry land, not even a trickle. And so to deny that these changes are taking place do make us look pretty foolish, and we have to provide substantive solutions on these issues. Now, I do think the cost of energy and electricity is also an issue, and that's why we have to find balanced, more comprehensive solutions than one party can deliver on its own, regardless of who that party is. That's why I think it's so important for people of differing perspectives in different regions to work together. In the Central Valley, for example, we pay some of the highest electricity costs in the entire nation. And that's a real cost of living affordability issue for millions of Californians. So we have to figure out how can we help people afford to live in California to meet their basic needs and at the same time address these public policy issues like pollution in the air, like climate change, like wildfires in ways that deliver results and lower greenhouse gas emissions and carbon and the pollutants that are affecting our communities.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Malcolm in Pacific, I think you have maybe picking up on a point Doug Ossie was discussing.
Hi, thank you for allowing me to be on your show today. For years, I was a Republican, but the Republican Party has left me behind. I love the planet I live on, and it seems as though the Republican Party has now become the mouthpiece for corporations that despoil our environment, that create a habitat that's not fit for humans to live in. And they seem to have tax breaks that really benefit a few people. When is the Republican Party going to wake up and try to govern for all the people instead of just a certain minority?
Well, and Matt Shoup, I mean, if you think about it, Teddy Roosevelt was the, you know, Republican president, one of the first conservationists in the country. Richard Nixon signed the Environmental Protection Act. Ronald Reagan signed, you may would have maybe regret it, but the CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act. You know, the Republican Party used to be very much for
We were all about environmental stewardship.
I think we still are. I've never met a Republican that wants dirty air or dirty water. And
Then why would you appoint, say, a coal executive, a coal lobbyist, to be the head of the EPA?
I'm just saying
there's a cognitive dissonance here.
Because I think that, you know, at the end of the day, I think he's trying to send a message to where there needs to be I like the point that Doug Ossie was making. There needs to be a certain level of pragmatism. You know, when you're talking about like cap and trade and water and drought and everything, it's I think one of the issues the Republicans had in this state was we had taken the back seat to Democrats. It was we were just trying to negotiate the best deal of what the Democrats were presenting to us rather than presenting our own alternatives. And that's something that's been the theme of everything I'm saying here is we need to present our own solutions and policies to show that we have leadership, to show that we have ideas. You know, when it comes to the drought thing, I think climate change is a part of it. We still need to be building more reservoirs and, you know, more water storage and desalinization and all these other things that go into it. You know, with the wildfires, there needs to be better forest management. We have, you know, millions of dead trees. So there's a lot more moving parts than just climate change or just more reservoirs. And there needs to be a coming together where both sides compromise for the betterment of people in California. But you've got extremists on both sides that are refusing to negotiate.
And Kristen, you were going to jump in, I think, about the environment as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think this caller hit the nail on the head, too. You know, for a long time, I really had to do a lot of self-reflection and think, did I change or did my party change? And I'd go through all the different issues, and I really, truly believe the party left me. I did not leave the party. The things that historically we have stood for, and environmental stewardship was clearly one of them, as you explained, throughout Teddy Roosevelt, Richard Nixon's, Ronald Reagan's tenures, is not something that we talk about, or certainly we don't lead on those issues today. And what Matt's saying in terms of more comprehensive solutions, I agree. And that's why I'm so fervently saying we have to do something different. We have to harness Democratic voters, Republican voters, NPP voters, and bring us all together towards people who are looking for an alternative to just one party rule. Because when there's just one party in charge, then the solutions to issues like wildfires, drought, climate change, et cetera, are more narrow than they would otherwise have to be if the two parties have to work together. And that's why it's so important in my mind that it's time for a new movement, perhaps even a new party that can provide checks and balances in California and more comprehensive public policy outcomes for the people who live here.
Got some comments from social media. Jordan writes, both parties in California are too extreme for me. There's a big middle that some party could take, to sort of the point you were making, Kristen, such as Emmanuel Macron did in France. Republicans in California could avoid extremes and move to the center as confident Democrats move further left. And then Curtis writes, the GOP is led by someone who has the support of white nationalists, neo-Nazis, and the former Grand Wizard of the KKK. That's a very difficult hurdle to overcome. When will the GOP condemn their leader's supporters? No California independent would ever join a party that is silent about racism.
I want to speak about that actually for a second. So I'm the chairman of the Contra Costa Republican Party. And in this cycle, we had a gentleman run who was an overt anti-Semite. I'm actually Jewish. And so it was interesting as he had ran in this congressional seat twice before as a registered Democrat. Nobody raised an eyebrow. No stories were written. Changes party Republican, runs as an anti-Semitic, you know, in this congressional seat. They had no chance of winning. And the New York Times and every media outlet in the Bay Area covers this. And I get to, you know, have to do all these interviews explaining this. I'm like, first of all, I'm Jewish. I'm not anti-Semitic. I love Israel. I wore my IDF T-shirt on one of these interviews. And it's like, you know, so it's like, why do we condemn these sports? First of all, you know, one of the things I said in the interview is we can't control, you know, who registers a Republican, who runs for office as a Republican. I wish we could. We condemned him as a party. We listed him as we had a thing in our bylaws that lists him as an unwelcome person, but that's like really the strongest thing that we can do. We told people not to vote for him. But at the same time, like, you know, if the Grand Wizard of the KKK comes out and says, I support you, it's like, what can you do about that? I mean,
okay, but there's a big difference between a random candidate running for office and the President of the United States. Right? When Charlottesville happened, he should have immediately condemned what was going on there with the white supremacists, the violence, the hatred, the bigotry. He refused to do so, and many Republicans refused to call him out on it. That is unacceptable, and that is killing the party.
I think there's a little pushback on the, you know, from members of the party, because that same standard is not held to the Democrats. There are as many crazy Democrats that have, you know, anti-Semitic, you know,
and that should
positions
be well.
And very fanatical, and they're causing a lot of violence throughout the country.
But they're not living in the White House, to Kristen's point.
That's right. They're not living in the White House, and we have to hold our own selves and our own colleagues within our party accountable to a higher standard.
But, well, I mean, the Democratic Party still has leadership. They still have congressional leadership, and those people should be held accountable for what members of their party do and what they
Absolutely.
Say. And they're not being. And so I think that there's frustration going that we have to apologize for absolutely everything anybody does. And you got Louis Farrakhan out there, who's incredibly anti-Semitic and says some really disgusting things. And he's celebrated by a lot of Democrats.
Well, but, you know, you remember when Obama was running for president, there was the whole thing with Reverend Wright in Chicago.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I mean, that was a big thing. And, you know, Obama addressed it with a speech on race in Philadelphia. So, it's not like it's being unnoticed.
One guy 10 years ago.
Well, I mean.
And the best way to change things, though, is to lead by example.
Yes.
I mean, we could play the blame game all day long. There's plenty of things to call out on both sides of the aisle. But at the end of the day, to change behavior, we have to lead by example, and we have to expect the leaders within our party to lead by example
and
call it out when they don't.
And I agree, and I don't think that racism or a lot of isms have any place in our party, and I don't think that historically they have, traditionally they have. I mean, historically they have not, traditionally they have not, and currently they don't. And I think that we do need to be more vocal in showing that. And that's why, you know, when this happened to me, I was very aggressive in getting out there and making sure that people knew that in no way did we support or endorse or anything.
Kristen, do you think that the rhetoric coming out of the Trump administration gives cover to people like the candidate running, the senator from Mississippi, Cynthia Hyde Wright, I think her name was, or Hyde Smith, rather? Does it encourage that sort of rhetoric, or is it just sort of, you know, coincidental that these things pop up at a time when Trump is in the White House?
I don't think it's coincidental. I think modeling various behaviors matters because people tend to follow what they see modeled, and that is not acceptable. You know, we need two parties competing in our state to provide the best solutions to the environment, justice, ending racism, and we have to have leaders at the White House and everywhere down from there who are leading in a positive way by example in order to unify our country again. We are being ripped apart at the seams, and in many ways it's because of the leaders at the very top of our nation. Now, are both parties culpable? Are there individuals in both parties culpable for some of the racism and bigotry and hateful rhetoric going on today? Of course. But we have to hold ourselves accountable first and be committed to leading by example, unifying this country in a way that Americans can be proud of again.
All right, here's a comment from Louise, who writes, just to clarify, there are millions of us who feel President Trump was and is our last hope. We're just afraid to come out of the closet, except that we talk amongst ourselves and vote, and we'll all say the same thing. And, you know, Kristen Olson, the president does represent a very significant slice of the country, some of whom are, maybe, I don't want to say the silent majority, because they're not necessarily a majority, but, in some places they are.
I think this is an important point, and I think the challenge is to continue to work with people who do support Trump and have supported Trump and understand where they're coming from, right? For my first couple years in the legislature, I represented much of the Sierra Nevada. It's a very rural area. And so many of them, I would virtually say all of them, and many of us in the Central Valley, have felt unrepresented for a very long time. And so many of those people thought, oh, here's somebody outside of the status quo, outside of the establishment. Maybe he'll do a better job helping me in the things that me, I and my family care about. So So I get that. We have to appeal to those same people who feel disenfranchised and say, you do deserve better representation, but you can achieve better representation and at the same time lead with an optimistic, positive, unifying vision instead of one that believes the ends justify the means and it doesn't matter what I have to say, what I have to do in order to deliver certain outcomes.
All right.
But he's onto something there. People feel like nobody cares about them, and we have to provide them a voice and a seat at the table.
All right, let's go back to the phones now. Ty in Santa Clara, welcome. You're next.
Hi, thanks for having me. I have a very simple question to start is, are there going to be any Republicans left? I mean, everybody I know, family members, coworkers, and even closet Republicans, they've either moved out of the state or they're fixing to do so. I myself am moving out in a few weeks.
But, are you a Republican?
Yes, and I actually voted for Trump. And here's the thing. When I look at the Democrats and the Republicans in California, I kid you not, I cannot tell the difference. The Republicans are just a watered-down version at this point in California than the true Republican, in my opinion.
And all right, I guess he's going to leave the air there. But, I'm wondering, Kristen Olson, we began this conversation by your saying the party isn't salvageable. What would either a new Republican Party or a different party to represent people like yourself, what would it look like? And what would it stand for?
And
how would it be different from the Democratic Party?
Sure. And that is what we need to figure out moving forward. And it has to be different from the Democratic Party because the whole point is to have two parties competing and working together in order to provide the best solutions to the problems plaguing our state and nation. So what that looks like, I actually believe it's something that would appeal not just to disenfranchised Republicans. I think it needs to be a broader effort than that, bringing, Democratic Californians, Republican voters, people in the middle, there's more NPPs in California now than there are Republicans in terms of percentages.
No party preference.
No party preference. Thank you. So it's bringing all of those individuals together to create something new. And I think, but you're right, we have to have very clear policy platforms so that people know what we stand for, right? I think that's one of the problems facing the California Republican Party today is people don't really know what they stand for. And so I think this new movement would talk a lot about affordability issues, the cost of living in California, educational excellence, environmental stewardship, immigration, even though that's more of a federal issue, there are still some things we can do on that, taxes and regulations, economic growth, and government reform. These are principles that are unifying to most people and that are hungry for bipartisan solutions instead of just Democratic answers. Because under that one-party rule, what we've seen poverty levels continue to rise. We've seen school outcomes continue to decrease, with some of the lowest performing school rates in the nation. We've seen income inequality grow. We've seen homelessness grow, achievement gaps grow. So we need these two parties competing to provide better solutions on all of these issues.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Frank in Davis, welcome. You're next.
Good morning. I live in Davis, and I've been here for 40 years. I'm 77 years old. I'm very active still. I'm a farmer and a biologist, among other things. I've lived abroad for many years, speak six languages, and I've tried to get into the cultures that I lived in and understand what they were about. The thing that bothers me about the Republican Party, and I'm basically, I guess, I'm a Green, just out of protest, but the problem that I find with the Republican Party is they've allied themselves too closely to religion. And the other thing, and of course that brings up all the problems of abortion and all this sort of thing, these things should be settled scientifically. They are a law, and yet we still are fighting against this. And the other thing is that they're just anti-science. And by even allowing someone like Trump, and of course, then there were 13 people running for the Republican presidential election, I guess it was the time before last, not one of them felt that evolution was a scientific fact.
Yeah.
It is a scientific theory.
Yeah.
And so by doing this, it just turns me off.
Yeah. Okay, Frank, thanks very much for the call. Kristen Olson, these are things that you were sort of alluding to earlier. when you're talking about climate change. What about this notion of religion? We brushed on it briefly talking about anti-Semitism, but what about the ties between evangelicals? I mean, clearly that is a big part of Donald Trump's base, maybe not so much in California, but what are your thoughts about that?
From a party standpoint?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know,
I mean, is it just part of, you know, it's in some ways it's unique to America. You know, if you look at Canada, they don't have that connection with religion in their politics, for example.
That's right. And I do think actually it has muddied the goals of politics and the goals of the faith community by having them more integrated together, right? The faith community, you know, their mission is to expand the gospel of Christ, if you will, within the evangelical movement anyway. It is not to put political leaders in place, right? And those two things have become very muddied and left a lot of people just, I guess, I don't even know what the word is, speechless as to what's going on, right? Some of the evangelical leaders, you know, behind Donald Trump to the extent that they've been. I think that the sweet spot for a movement is to protect the role of religious belief in public life, including the lack of belief. Right? So whether that's Christianity, Islam, Judaism, you know, agnosticism, atheism, these should all be protected by government, and they are by our United States Constitution.
All right.
I don't see a role.
All right. Thank you very much for that. Thanks so much for joining us this hour, Kristen Olson, a member of the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors. We are out of time, but thanks so much for your thoughts. Appreciate it. Matt Shoup, also good to see you as well. And obviously, we've got another election in a couple years, and we'll be debating these things as the days go on and months go on. I'm Scott Schaefer here today for Mina Kim. Thanks so much for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of the Minetti Schremm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.